who wears a dress to homecoming with sleeves?
Oh my gosh.
I was like, Dad, I'm not getting a dress with sleeves.
Hi, folks, and welcome to Pastor's Kid, a podcast that explores life, relationships, religion, and what goes on behind the parsonage doors. I'm your host, Piper Ramsey Sumner. Today, I'm joined by Megan Ramsey. Growing up in Oklahoma and Texas, Megan has fallen in love with the East Coast and now lives in Washington, D.C. She's a master of urban education and a longtime teacher who in the past year has moved into the education technology field. A lover of travel, Megan shares her adventures and advice for vacationing on a budget through her website, meganthetravelingteacher.com. She's also a pastor's kid and happens to be my big sister. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you, Piper. I'm glad to hang out with you.
I'm glad you're here. Well, let's get into this. So you're my sister, of course, so I know that you're a pastor's kid, but explain what makes you a pastor's kid.
Yeah, so my dad was, our dad was a pastor basically my whole life. I mean, from the time I was born, he was a pastor of, you know, a student center and then a church and then another church. And then I went off to school and he was still, you know, college and he was still a pastor until like a year ago when he left pastoring a church. But like, I still see myself, you know, as a pastor's kid, even at 30, 31 years old. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, I guess it never leaves you.
Oh yeah. Once a PK, always a PK.
Yeah.
And we grew up in the Church of the Nazarene, which is a Wesleyan evangelical denomination that's pretty small. It's only maybe like 100 years old. And our parents discovered that when they were in their early 20s and their family became a part of that. And so we've been Nazarene for a generation or so. So what about stereotypes? Because I know that's like a big thing. Like people are like, oh, pastor's kid, when they hear what you are. What are some that you remember hearing growing up?
Yeah, I mean, when I was little, I don't feel like I understood the stereotypes, but like once I became a teenager, it was literally all the time. Like once people found out my dad was a pastor, it was always like, oh, you're either perfect or you're a horrible child. Mm-hmm. Like you're the perfect child or the worst child. And there was no in between. And I remember like being like, this is such a stereotype because I'm just a normal person. So like people just like either think you're amazing or awful. Another stereotype I feel like is that we know everything about Christianity and you're expected to like speak up about everything. Yeah. So you're in youth group or you're in Sunday school and you're expected to know the right answer always or to have something like meaningful to say. And you're like, I don't have anything to say. I don't want to talk today. But people expect that of you.
I had that too, but I remember wanting to be that person. I was like, I want to be the one that knows everything. And I was always striving for that, to be like the Bible expert and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a lot of ways we were just naturally, like, because you spend so much time at church. So like, what else are you going to do but hear everything and like get to know the answers to everything.
Right.
So I would agree. Oh yeah, and the last thing, well, maybe this isn't even a stereotype, but it goes along with what I was just saying. But like, we spend all our time at church. I feel like that's kind of a stereotype, but it's also kind of true because you really do spend a lot of time at church. Yeah. So, I mean, it's also a stereotype, like that you know everything about church and you know, I mean, and you kind of do as a pastor's kid. So maybe it's not such a stereotype as the truth.
Yeah. But they just kind of expect you to always be there.
Well, and then the idea of like, you're expected to be at everything, you know, like you have to go to every church function that there is and you can't skip anything. Like, even if it's like a fun youth group outing, you like have to go, don't have a choice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting, like kind of an identity. It's not really an identity. It's like a label that you get and then a kind of lifestyle, you know, you live your parents' lifestyle until you're an adult. But there's this like extra layer because there's this expectation, or at least if not an expectation, this baggage of the stereotype or whatever it is that follows pastors' kids around.
Yeah, exactly.
Were you ever like, oh no, I am the really sheltered one, or?
No. No, I really feel like I worked not to be either one of those. And maybe that was like my desire to fit in to wherever I was. I was like, I don't want to be the perfect one, but I also am in no way going to be the like bad one. Because I did always follow the rules. Like I was definitely a rule follower and hated breaking any rules. So I never broke rules, like ever. So I was definitely the more perfect, but I didn't want to come off that way to other people. So I would try and hide it, I guess.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, I did the same. Definitely.
And I don't even feel like our parents like sheltered us all that much. Like I remember things like, and I didn't even realize they were Christian things until someone at church would like say it, but like Harry Potter, like people were not allowed to read Harry Potter or like allowed to do certain things. And I just remember being like, why wouldn't you be able to read Harry Potter? But then at the same time, people were worried about witchcraft and whatever in that time period of us growing up. So yeah, there's that. I feel like, I guess when we got older, we were sheltered in like a lot of ways, because I still remember it. And this didn't happen as much to you and Aaron because you're older, but like when I was going to get a dress for my 9th grade homecoming, I remember dad being like, okay, well, make sure you pick out a dress with sleeves. And I was like, who wears a dress to homecoming with sleeves?
Oh my gosh.
I was like, dad, I'm not getting a dress with sleeves. And I told him that. I was like, straight up, like, no, I'm not getting a dress with sleeves. I think they wanted us to be more sheltered than we were. But like, also I bought a dress that was strapless and dad didn't stop me from wearing it. So like we're sheltered in a way, but then like our parents were not overly oppressive, I guess is the way to put it.
Yeah. They're never like authoritarian.
Yeah. I feel like there was a good balance between like being the goody two shoes and I was never terrible.
Yeah. So in a lot of ways, I think our upbringings, like you said, as pastor's kids aren't really that different, I think, than other childhoods, depending on the household and stuff. But what is something that you would say is actually unique about the life of a pastor's kid?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of unique things about being a pastor's kid, because you do really grow up in a community and eyes are always on you. And I think that affects people in a lot of different ways. And I think that's why you do see so many pastor's kids so far in one way or the other, because everybody's watching you. And what do you do with all of that attention? And like, what do you do with all of that pressure on you kind of thing? So I do think there's a lot of pressure associated with being a pastor's kid. As far as like, there's a ton of positives though, I think too, with the way we were brought up. So like one that I really appreciate and come back to all the time is how we were exposed to all different kinds of people in all different walks of life, a lot more than our peers were. So there were times where I interacted with homeless people, or we worked with refugees, and we were around really rich people, really poor people. We had the chance to just be exposed to people who had it all and who had nothing. That's like a pretty unique thing, because we didn't live in a bubble. We lived in a bubble, but we didn't. You know what I'm saying? Like our bubble was different than other people's bubble. And I appreciate that about our upbringing, because I always saw people as people, and our parents treated everyone as people and as important. And so I've always grown up, every person is important. And so that's something I think is really unique. And that naturally comes if you're around a church, because you get to be around so many different people in a congregation.
I love that. That's really good. Because I was thinking of things like, you get to bring home the communion juice after everyone's used it, and we take home the extra cartons, and getting hand-me-downs from people from different families, all different families. You get a variety of clothes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there were some good perks. Like I remember the Smiths would let us go out on their boat, which is huge because we could never afford a boat. They would let us use it. Or the guy who owned I'm forgetting his name, but the guy who owned the car dealership and would let us use the tickets for the Stars and the Spurs.
Oh, yeah.
Not Spurs. What am I talking about? The Stars and the Mavericks games. We wouldn't have been able to go to games if they hadn't given us those tickets. So I think there are some other, you know, opportunities and things out there that we were gifted with because we are pastor's kids and probably wouldn't have gotten.
Yeah, it feels like there's a sense of like community care for like pastors.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially in smaller kind of communities because we grew up in a smaller church, mm-hmm. which can be good or bad because like you said, it could be all attention on you and that's not always something that, especially when you're growing up, it's not something you want.
Yeah, that can be stressful as we know.
Let's talk about our dad a little bit because he's the pastor of the family that we're talking about. Would you say that he's more pastoral, like shepherd-like, or more prophetic, like a call to action?
Man, I don't know. Maybe more of a shepherd type, I guess. Because I think he was really good at, he's really good at listening to people and like giving them advice. And he's much more of a like stoic, quiet person until something needs to be said and then he'll say it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's like that. I feel like he was really like that in his sermons because a lot of them, even I would learn about dad listening to his sermons because he would tell stories that he wouldn't necessarily like tell us one-on-one. And so I remember I learned a lot about dad and how he grew up listening to him be a preacher. So I would say more of a shepherd type, you know, bringing people in and together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like that thing of watching and learning your like family history from like the pulpit while you're sitting in the pews, I think that is like a really unique thing. I want to know if other pastors' kids have experienced that too, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, that he's telling a story I've never heard about my grandma or whatever it is. Who's this uncle that you're talking about that you've never mentioned before?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I haven't told you about them? So, you know, there's your public self and your like private self. I really don't think that dad was that different from his public and private self, which I think is a good thing. I think you should be authentic like through and through.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think dad was the same person no matter who you and is mm-hmm. the same person no matter who he is talking to.
So what do you think might be different about your or our experience as pastor's kids compared to others' pastor's kids? Maybe ones that you've met or what you feel like you hear in the stories or whatever.
Yeah, maybe the biggest difference would be that I mentioned this already kind of, but like our parents were not overbearing. And I feel like a lot of pastors' kids are micromanaged. And I never felt micromanaged by our parents. I always felt like I knew what the rules were and I knew what was right and wrong really clearly in a lot of ways. But I never felt like I couldn't be myself. And I feel like a lot of people end up rebelling when they feel like they can't be themselves. And I just never had that experience because I always felt the freedom to be who I am in a lot of ways.
Especially because of that stereotype of the pastor's kid being really sheltered, which I mean, part of it was not me not realizing how sheltered I was.
Yeah.
But I was always like, we're not that sheltered, you know. But I really think that, I mean, partially we weren't that rebellious, but I think also, yeah, our parents gave us a lot of space to be ourselves and to do our goofy things that teenagers and kids do and figure life out. There wasn't a lot of like of that control. Our parents are not authoritarians.
Yeah, I agree. And then also they let us be friends with pretty much anybody
mm-hmm.
until they figured out who it was good and bad. Like I remember there were these like guys who started coming to church and I befriended that, like became friends with them. And nobody was mad about, like mom and dad were fine with me being friends with whoever was in the youth group kind of thing. And then it ended up that kid stole a cell phone from he went to like our district youth thing
mm-hmm.
and he stole a youth pastor's phone and he had been texting me on it, but I didn't know that he had stolen it and that he had been texting me on it. And so dad messaged, I remember it because dad called me and was like, why have you been messaging this phone number? I was like, it's a friend from church. What are you talking about? Like, it's just this kid from church. And he was like, that's a stolen cell phone. And I was like, well, how was I supposed to know it was a stolen cell phone?
Yeah.
Like, obviously I won't text it anymore, but like, how was I supposed to know it was stolen? There were things like that, but mom and dad never stopped me from hanging out with somebody
mm-hmm.
because of you know, they seemed bad or whatever. Never had that experience either.
Yeah. And you went to a lot of like concerts and stuff. So you were out in the night in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, yeah. Lots of concerts. All the, that was the emo phase. I won't scream on the podcast. Don't worry.
So I think it's like you kind of talked about earlier, the pressure. It's really common during adolescence, especially for pastors' kids, you know, when they're in their parents' home, to feel as if they have to live up to a higher standard than their peers. And they sense judgment from others if they don't live up to the expectations, which, you know, it always feels like an impossible standard. Why do you think so many pastors' kids feel that pressure?
Yeah, I mean, I think in Christianity anyway, there's that pressure, right? For a lot of people. Mm-hmm. That pressure of like being perfect and like God will love you more if you don't make mistakes and getting points in heaven kind of mentality. So I think that's one thing. Like that's how a lot of people that we went to church with growing up see it that way. And I wouldn't say our dad was that way. And he didn't preach that way, but that's a Christian pressure. I think that's on everybody. I also think that pastors have a lot of pressure to be perfect, you know? And so that naturally, that pressure and that need to be perfect is going to trickle down to your children because it's going to affect the way you parent and the way you interact and like all of that. And like you said, like a lot of people can end up having a different personal and public life. And that can also make it to where pastors' kids feel like they have to appear perfect, but then they are not perfect behind the scenes. I feel like there's a lot that goes on there. Yeah. Also, you're expected to be like the example for everybody. And when you don't live up to that example, people will talk about it. Like I remember as a teenager, there were people in the church that like complained about me and mom was like really adamant that I was just a teenager and you can't hold me to the same standard as an adult. Like, I don't know if you remember that, but we had that lady in our church and she like yelled at me and I yelled back and then she got really mad and went to mom and dad and they were like, well, everybody heard you yell at her and she is 13 and you are 40. So, and at 13, you don't regulate your emotions the same way as an adult.
Right.
You can't be held to the same expectation as somebody who's an adult, you know? So there's that, I think. And I think the way your parents react to things really changes how you feel about it. And I remember mom telling me that and being like, you shouldn't yell at her. But then she had a responsibility not to yell as well. And that takes a lot of the pressure off when your parents react to you that way as a learning experience versus like you getting in trouble. And I mean, I did get in trouble, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I did get in trouble, but the pressure wasn't on in the same way as it could have been.
And I think a lot of pastors' kids, when they're put in like maybe those kinds of situations and their parents seems to, you know, go against them, it feels like they're picking the church over them. Like, mom, my parent is picking the church over their child.
Yeah.
Even if that's not the case, it can definitely feel that way, especially when you're kind of pulled about by the opinions of others and worried about those things. And it is difficult because as a pastor, there you have this extra like kind of level and expectations of ethics and of how you act and participate with everybody else in the world. And if you don't live up to that space, even if you're not, it's not on a Sunday morning when you're behind the pulpit, even if somebody sees you on, you know, Tuesday night or whatever, that will have repercussions. And that's part of what you have to accept when you take on that role. But what a lot of pastors' kids say is that we didn't get to choose to take on that role and we had to take it on too.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, because sometimes I feel like I still haven't shaken that feeling of judgment or expectation. What about you? Have you been able to shake that off in adulthood?
Yeah, I mean, I'm naturally a like people pleaser and naturally someone who wants to succeed and works really hard. I think in the lens of like religion and like Christianity, yes, but in general, no. In a lot of ways, I still want to be like, you know, and live up to the expectations, but there they're not the expectations I feel like anyone else has set for me. They're expectations I have for myself now. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I still struggle with it, I guess. I want to be like the best and be perfect. Mm-hmm. Still to this day.
Yeah, that pressure. You just kind of move from church or people, whoever, to like now it's inside internally.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit more work.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something that can really stick with you, I guess. Mm-hmm.
I feel it too, definitely, that kind of perfectionism and expectation. And yeah, I'm like, who am I worried about? You know, whose opinion am I truly like that concerned about and realize like,
right.
Okay. A fun one. What was your favorite youth event that you can remember?
Oh my gosh. I loved youth events. Like they were the bomb. I'm such an outgoing person. I like was the one who would go to camp by myself, even though no one else at the church would go, because I just wanted to hang out with all of the other people, you know, and like get to know more people, other places. So, oh my gosh, what would be my favorite? I don't know. Church camp was probably the best, but also when I was like a junior and senior, I got to go and help at kids camp, and I was an intern at kids camp. And so we would go and help out all week. And that was so much fun. And it was the same kids each summer. We went like 3 summers in a row, and it was all us same like 7 teens. And we all got to, you know, help with the kids camp and like hang out at night. And it was so much fun. So that might be my favorite. I also got to be like a special Bible character and got to be Mighty Missionary Megan. And someone from our church helped at church camp, and she wrote all the parts, and we would do the skits together. And I always just had a really fun time doing that. So I think that might be my favorite. And I love working with kids.
That was going to be my question. Was this before or after you knew that you were going to be a teacher?
I feel like I knew I was going to be a teacher like forever. Like I feel like I always wanted to be a teacher. I've always wanted to help people. I think that's something else. Maybe it's unique to all pastors' kids. So our parents did really well. Was they really built a love for other people in me and a care for others. And so I was always like, what can I do to help other people? And education, like working with kids, was so much fun. And so it was naturally the job for me.
Mighty Missionary Megan. I remember that you had like a cape and everything.
Yeah, I still have the t-shirt. Yeah, I do.
So you were obviously taught the beliefs of your denomination of the Nazarene Church at church. But how much space were you given at home to explore those questions and those doubts and beliefs that you did have?
I feel like there wasn't very much room for that, honestly. We were very inundated with it everywhere. So it was really hard to even doubt it at all, is what I'll say. Like I didn't really have any doubts because there was no one else who wasn't in Christianity around me, right? And even people who are at differing levels of Christianity. So like, you know, people like I was talking about earlier, we got to see many different types of people, but it was always in the lens of Christianity. So it wasn't until I was like in college that really I knew anybody outside of Christianity or outside, you know, that bubble. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to think of like, I didn't really have doubts because I didn't really like have a chance to doubt, which is unique to us because we went to a Christian school.
Yeah. So we had Bible class every day on top of church.
Yeah. Where was I not hearing that this is real, this is true, this is the way, the truth, the life, you know, like there was not a chance for me to doubt it. Basically, I was around it all the time.
You know, what's interesting thinking about this is our senior year, there was a class, they called it Christian Humanities. And it was basically just like Christian apologetics. Like, how can I prove, like, here are all these arguments against God or against the Bible, and here's why they're all bad, you know? And there was one section specifically where we just went through all these other religions and why they were wrong. And some of them were, the arguments were so poorly like constructed that even me at like 16, 17, I was like, you can make that same argument of Christianity. And for me,
anybody. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was for me kind of the thing that started me, my first kind of like crisis of faith, you know? And so, And then going into college, which we both went to a Nazarene college. And so that kind of indoctrination didn't really end until we graduated college, you know, which is weird to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I will say, I remember because I took that class senior year of high school too. And I do remember like watching specifically this one documentary about Muslims in Israel who are like failed bombers. They like failed their bombings and they were caught.
Oh, like suicide bombers?
Yeah, suicide bombers. That's the word I was trying to think of. And I just remember being like, this is so crazy that someone would die for their religion. But then like one of the things we're told all the time is like, you should lay down your life for, you know, believing as a Christian. And we were talking about camp, us just talking about camp and how there was that game where it was like, you had to act like you were being persecuted, basically. And there were all these different scenarios of like, the guy walks up to you at school and is like, I'm going to shoot you if you don't, if you, you know, say you're a Christian, will you still say it? And, you know, you're in a foreign country and the Bible's not allowed. Do you hide your Bible or do you bring it out? So it's the same dying for your beliefs is there, but I don't know. I guess it didn't cause a crisis for me as much as it maybe should have.
Yeah. Well, you were at camp, especially you were only like, I don't know, 12 or something.
Yeah, that's true.
We were basically cosplaying Columbine.
Yeah. That's yeah.
If you really think about it, they're like, okay, the whole campus is a school and you're walking around the school. And if you get caught, you know, it was like this whole scenario they made that was like mixed in with this capture the flag game. And I remember if you got in trouble or you like died or whatever, you were sent to detention. And that was just one of the counselors like on the tennis court reading.
On the tennis court. Yeah.
Yeah. Reading Jesus Freaks, the book by DC Talk. That's all about martyrs.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah, I remember them reading that book too, and it was like completely dark outside, and he would just be like reading it with a, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there are all these terrible, sad stories about people dying in awful ways.
I had that book. I read it. So, horrible book, but.
And that, it's like the modern day, like the Book of Martyrs or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not a bad book in concept, because I think it's fine to like read those stories, but maybe not just like during a game late at night at camp
with small children.
Not the time or the place with children who are like 10 to 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe not the time.
Yeah. I think it was the older kid game, I think, or something, like fourth grade and up.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the senior camp.
Mm-hmm. And that was the camp where our mom and dad met.
Yeah. It's a good camp. For the most part. Other than that one thing.
Yeah, other than that one thing and, you know, the other thing. That one time that mom had felt like God had really given her something to, like, say to the kids. And she asked if she could talk during chapel. And he was like, you know what God says about women. She was like, okay, cool. I'll be in the horse barn. I'm just going to do that from now on.
I don't remember that story, but that's pretty good.
Yes. She went up to him. He was the head guy that everyone loved and stuff. And it like really upset her. She's like trusted this guy and thought that he respected her, you know? And that's something that we can get into with all of these things where it's like, well, my belief tells me this, but what my belief is telling me to do is, you know, ignore your humanity or not give you the space to like, to be who you want to be or to like operate in the world as you wish to.
Mm.
So in my personal life, the first few times that I learned or experienced something that was different than what I believed, it was really scary for me. I felt a bit like, you know, the walls were caving in or like I was falling, free falling without a net. How have you dealt with challenges like that in your...
I never faced challenges. I'm perfect. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
No, no, I'm kidding. I mean, I think... Like I said, I feel like I was older when this happened to me, but it was probably the first time even in high school, early college, I remember feeling like I didn't fit in at the college I went to, like at SNU, I just didn't feel like I aligned with a lot of the people that were there. And I had a really hard time with the culture at the school of being like, you had to be one specific way or otherwise you weren't involved in this school at all. So like anybody who was involved in student government or who was in leadership had the same personality to me. And I remember just feeling like there's got to be room in Christianity for other personality types. And just feeling like I wasn't that personality, you know, that was the main person at our college. And it was such a small school, you know, like 400 students per grade at that college. So if you didn't fit in, you were, you know, there wasn't much else to do. There's really only one thing to do at a time. So it was either the main thing or nothing. So I made myself fit in because what else were you going to do? But the first time I ever felt there was something else out there was when I went to the East Coast, when I went to Boston, and I went to a Christian college, and it was similarly really small, similarly Nazarene, but everybody acted so different there. Like, it was not the kind of place where everybody was the same, and everyone was much more chill and was much more themselves. And so it was the first time that I had seen Christians act in so many different ways or just come from so many different backgrounds and then still call themselves Christians. And that was really meaningful for me and eye-opening for me because I was like, oh, I don't have to fit into this one box. I can be myself and still be a Christian. There's other ways to live out my beliefs besides this one cookie cutter way that I've seen my whole life. So that was probably like the first time. And it wasn't scary for me in a way. It was like really freeing because before that I didn't know what I was missing. So like I knew something was missing, but I didn't know what it was. And I always felt left out and I didn't know why. And when I went and saw other people, I was like, this was it. I was thinking I had to be this exact set of steps to be a Christian, but I don't. And so that was like a really freeing experience. It like put a lot of new thoughts into my mind, like that I hadn't had before and that I really appreciate still to this day that I experienced.
Yeah, I think that's such a big thing of just like opening up your world by just coexisting, you know, with other people or just going to a different side of the country. And especially growing up like in the Bible Belt, feels very much like a monoculture in a lot of places. And then especially when you get onto like a campus where everybody comes from like kind of the same tradition and
yeah,
everybody, there's this like expectation of what a good Christian, and specifically we're talking about evangelical Christians, obviously.
Right.
And I just think that, I don't know why, but when I was in college too, I noticed it was like, everybody wanted to look like how the mega churches looked, you know, completely put together and dressed with like the highest quality of clothes and the personality of being very like outgoing in that specific kind of way, this kind of like charisma and stuff, which to me, it feels like a show. It doesn't feel authentic.
Yeah.
Because it usually isn't. It's a little bit of like a performance. And so then outside of the religion department, there were things like that student government position in different kind of places where ministry was kind of being done with the students, but it was like, because almost all except a couple of the ministry students themselves had that kind of persona, never, I think maybe one time in my whole experience at SNU did an actual ministry major do the chapel. I think I can only think of like one time, and actually he was a philosophy major and he was the president of student government. So he got to do a speech no matter what, you know, because they always got one or whatever. But the ministry students were never in any leadership roles, never asked to do anything in the chapel department, even though it's literally what we were training to do and what we were doing every Sunday and Wednesday and throughout the week in our internships. Mm-hmm. But none of us fit perfectly into that kind of other category, or we weren't part of a friend group. Honestly, it's kind of just a friend group that are, you know, the popular kids. It's really weird. It really was kind of like that. like an 80s movie.
Yeah, and I think because it's so small, that's how it is. But I mean, I have nothing, like, I liked a lot of those people and I still talk to some of them today, but like, I feel like it says a lot that I'm not good friends with any people from college anymore. I think that, like, I'm not great friends. Like, I talk to my friends from high school. Like, I talk to Isabel and Elizabeth, like, all the time. And they're friends who I went to, you know, high school and church with, but I don't have a college friend that I talk to all the time. And I think a lot of that has to do with the, like, fact that I didn't fit in there. And maybe I hung out with the popular people, but I just never felt the same connection because of what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll all hear this and be like, well, we didn't like her. So it's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine. We just hung out for 4 years. But yeah.
Okay. What is an I didn't sign up for this pastor's kid moment?
I mean, anytime Dad would make me befriend someone new, and I was very outgoing, he would always make me go up to every teenager that was in church. And even if I go home to visit, he still would make me, he'd be like, she's like 25, go talk to her. I'm like, I'm visiting for one Sunday. I leave to fly home tomorrow, but you're going to want me to come up to the one person and welcome them to church. And it's fine. Like, I don't mind being that outgoing, like, hello person, but it is funny to me that, like, that's something that I, like, feel like I didn't sign up for, but because I am more outgoing, I ended up being that person every time. What else did I not sign up for? Any of the times where someone wanted you to, like, be perfect, I didn't sign up for being perfect, and I'm not perfect. I'm a human just like you, so you can back off. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of anything else. I don't know. What are your examples?
I don't know. Probably, yeah, like the interacting with people I didn't want to have to interact with, or being stuck at church for like long hours.
Yeah.
If mom or dad, or they get caught talking to somebody, or like, sorry, we got this meeting. And so you just have to sit there and just wait and wait.
Yeah.
And especially like during the school year when it was like, you know, like a Wednesday night or something, and it's like, the sun's going down. I just want to go back home, but you're stuck. And then it's like, I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
That is something that was unique maybe about our experience was because of Dad's job, he didn't have regular working hours.
Yeah.
And so he was always there when we would leave in the morning, and he was always there when we got home. And, you know, there were evenings when he sometimes was gone, but, you know, most of the time he was with us. And then, you know, Sundays were busy, but other than Wednesdays and stuff like that. But we still got evenings with Dad, you know.
Yeah, I remember there were times when I was like middle school, early high school, where that was not the case. Dad was having to work a lot because of that house we were living in. It was really expensive. And we did not have enough money. So Dad ended up taking more jobs, and like, he was not around for a while. As you got older, I think that changed a lot, but I remember him not being around for a couple of years, like specifically being like, when is Dad coming home, several days in a row. I think that's what comes with like not making much money.
Yeah.
You're around less, you're working more.
Mm-hmm. Most small church pastors are bivocational, trivocational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of just expected nowadays, which is not cool.
Yeah.
So now that you're in adulthood and forging your own path and everything, what are some aspects of your inherited belief system that you have held on to, and maybe some things that you've let go of?
Yeah. I mean, I think as far as like things I've held on to, the caring about all people and like everyone is loved and like you are your best self when you're caring about the world and things like that have all been really important and impactful in the way I live my life. And our parents did a really good job of bringing us up that way. Some things I've let go of, I mean, a lot of like little societal things I think I've let go of. Like, I've mentioned this already, but the idea of like, you have to look a certain way, or, you know, our family, like the Nazarene church, is really strict on some things that aren't necessarily like actually wrong, like drinking or dancing or like the kind of clothes you wear. I've let go of a lot of that stuff. I don't see it as something that makes you a good Christian or not anymore. Mm-hmm. Anything in excess, of course, is like going to be a problem. Like nobody should be an alcoholic, but you know what I'm saying? Like there's nothing wrong with those things.
Right.
I would say that. And then also we grew up in a really like in the Bible Belt. So there's a lot of things I've given up from that just no one. And I really appreciate living on the East Coast, 'cause like no one cares about. So things like getting married, or you're choosing your career over children, like that's not a thing out here. You know what I mean? That's not a thing. You can have a kid whenever you want. Mm-hmm. You can get married whenever you want. You don't have to be married. You don't have to be single. You know, like a lot of those things people just don't care about out here. And like so many people care about them back in the Bible Belt. I think we also grew up like in a church that doesn't believe LGBTQ people have the same rights and don't believe the way poverty overseas is treated is a lot different for me now than how we grew up.
It's a big one, yeah.
So I feel like there's a lot of things, but I don't feel like any of them are inherently like Christian things that I've given up. They're more societal than actual things I would, or maybe I should say they're more evangelical Christian things than actual Christian things, to me at least, in my beliefs nowadays.
Mm-hmm. So you still identify as a Christian, but not so much Nazarene?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say it's really hard to identify as Nazarene for me anymore, because they've been so strict on things that I just don't think you need to be strict about. And I think that the Nazarene church in general is having a harder time keeping young people excited about it because of that. They bought into a lot of things about society and societal changes that need to happen in the early 1900s that are just not the case for today. Mm-hmm. You know, things like they didn't believe in going to the movies even at one point. And who nowadays would say there's anything wrong with going to the movies? It's not inherently evil to watch a movie.
Actually, my freshman year at SNU, one of the first people I met, she'd never been to the movies before.
See, but like,
because, and I was like, why? And she's like, because I'm Nazarene. And I was like, what? I didn't know Nazarenes did that. And that's when I learned that that was an old rule that some Nazarenes still hold on to.
Yeah, well, I mean, think about like, they didn't do dances when I was in college. Like, and I got in trouble for wearing a Razorback t-shirt. And I was like, what? Like, oh, I was told I could not leave the dorm without a sweater on.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I had a Razorback t-shirt on. And I was like, I've owned this t-shirt for years. Like, what is so sexual about showing my...
Shoulder blades.
I was like, this is so dumb. But I mean, I put a sweater on and then took it off once I left. But it was, you know, like there are things like that that I think the Nazarene church just it's going to have a really hard time with.
Yeah.
Because those were things in society, not really Christianity. So anybody that relies on society, you know, or societal thoughts is going to have a difficult time. Mm-hmm. Continuing to attract more people.
Yeah. And especially the stance of being like this feeling of like we're opposed to society. Like,
yeah.
You know, it was like this whole not of this world thing, or like we're not supposed to be like blah, blah, blah. And all that does is like just tell everybody, okay, everybody look inward. We're going to make this big circle and we're all just going to look inward and we're never going to reach out, never going to do the things that Jesus called us to do, to love our neighbors, to be the body of Christ, you know, and to reach out and into the world. And instead it becomes about controlling what the people on the inside are doing, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think that any of this, there's not like these sinister like leaders, like, you know, up at the top or something, like organizing all this or making, you know, it's not just Nazarenes. It's all across, I think, the evangelical fundamentalist kind of spectrum throughout the Bible Belt and stuff. People who have inherited this belief system, which evangelicalism is only maybe 150 like years old.
Yeah.
Not that old. Which to us, we were taught this is how Christianity is, how it has like basically always been. The Nazarenes just figured it out in the last like 100 years and kind of perfected it. But like, this is what Christianity is supposed to look like,
right,
and what it does look like. And so then when like you go into the East Coast and somebody is, you know, you meet somebody from, or just from another denomination or something, then what you grew up in can kind of open up your like whole world. And they don't really, they as in the people who are on the inside and who are afraid to look out, often try to find ways to keep that. Yeah. They try to keep people in, whether it's like through shame or whatever it is, you know, and they're like, come stay. That makes me, I'm rambling. It makes me think there's this cartoon of the like fish in the lake. And there's this one fish that's like evolved and he's got feet and he's walking out. And the other fish says, hey, why don't you stay and change it from the inside? And me, especially being in like the, being a ministry student, yeah, and stuff, there was so much of that, like, stay in the church. We need people like you who are more forward thinking and progressive to stay and help push the congregation forward.
Yeah.
But by the time I was leaving SNU, I realized like, you know, if I really truly want to live out what I believe, I don't want to spend my entire life trying to get other people to change and to like, and to listen to what I think. I'm just going to go do it. That process though can be really difficult, that the process of leaving, you know?
Yeah.
Did you ever have any kind of worry and anxiety? Like, I'm not going to be Nazarene anymore. Is like, are mom and dad going to be upset or?
Yeah. I mean, there aren't really very many Nazarenes around where I live. So I think that naturally I haven't had that issue. And I'm so removed from the Bible Belt that like when I moved, it was a natural break from kind of like from everything I'd grown up with in a way to find a new church and like a new community and those kinds of things. I did go to a Nazarene church actually for a couple of years after I moved here, but it was a good church. I mean, again, it's different. It's different here, even within the Nazarene denomination. But after a couple of years, everyone who I was friends with at that church had moved. And so there were no young, you know, mid-20s people anymore. So it didn't make sense for me to go there anymore. And so I started going to another church actually started by a former Nazarene that I had heard about from a friend so he left the Nazarene church and started a church on his own in DC. But there's no Nazarene church inside DC.
Oh, wow.
And there's one in Arlington, and the one in Arlington I visited, but only about 9 people went there. Have I told you the story?
I think so.
It's a good podcast story, I guess. Not to like bash this church at all,
yeah,
but I went and visited one Sunday. Again, I was like new and wanted to like branch out, whatever. And I went and there were literally 9 people there, which is fine. It's a small church. But the topic for that Sunday, the guy teaching it decided to go with like, are you a Christian and are you going to heaven or hell? And played a video that looked like it was maybe from the 80s, maybe early 90s. And it was like the devil knocking on heaven's door, trying to get in, and it wouldn't let him in. And I was like, there are 9 people here. You could just go one by one and talk independently to each one of us to find out if we're a Christian or not. Like, this is so awkward. And like, how many of these people are new and how many have like gone to this church for years and they're hearing you try and like give them the fear of hell? I don't,
right.
It did not make sense to me. I was very uncomfortable. So I never returned, but I was like, I feel like that's like the most evangelical church thing you could possibly do. It's like, oh, there's a new person in the crowd. Let's do a are you going to heaven speech. I was just like, why?
And people wonder why the church is like dying and why like our generation is like leaving the church in droves, you know?
Yeah.
And also once you've heard one hellfire and brimstone, you've heard them all, right?
Yeah. But I was just like, why not just come and talk to me? Because no one spoke to me.
Yeah.
It was literally just like the pastor guy didn't even talk to me. Only one lady spoke to me. And I was like, there are 9 people here. We could all be talking to each other and no one talked the whole time. I was like, why am I here? It was so weird. It was so uncomfortable.
That's hilarious, though.
It was so uncomfortable.
9 people. How was the church building? Really big?
I mean, it wasn't huge, but it wasn't small. So it was probably built for at least like 100-something people. I'm really bad at guessing those kinds of things, but...
I'd expect you to be good at that as a pastor's kid, to be able to tell how many chairs, how many people can fit in these pews.
How many fit in a pew? Oh my God.
So what would you say now? What drives you and what gives you hope?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've always had a sense of like, I want the world to be a better place. And so that's always what kind of has driven me and giving me hope, is that there's like always the chance of a better tomorrow. And like, what am I doing to contribute to make the world a better place? So I definitely think that that drives me in everything I do, is like, how can I be a better person? And how can I, you know, make the world a better place to live in for everybody, not just myself, but like for everyone around me.
Mm-hmm. So you work in education. You were a teacher mm-hmm. for quite a few years, and now you work in the education, like curriculum kind of sector, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Would you say that being a pastor's kid, is there anything from that experience growing up that has helped you or made you better at your job?
Yeah.
Maybe made you worse?
Yeah. I mean, the church environment gave me a lot of opportunities to work with kids and like get exposure. And like, once I knew I wanted to work with kids and be around them, I got a lot of opportunities to do that, right? So I was also a naturally trusted person, I guess. I didn't have to build trust with a lot of people. And maybe that was like because I was a pastor's kid, but also because I am so outgoing and like I'll do whatever it takes kind of person. But I think being a pastor's kid had definitely helped in that aspect, just getting me lots of experience working with kids in different ways. And then I also think, going back to like, I chose to be a teacher because I wanted to help people. And the reason I wanted to help people is because I believe that like God calls us to all do something for the greater good. And so I want to do good. And what's a way that I can do good in the world? I can work in education, because everyone deserves an education. And education is the number one way that people get out of poverty. And I didn't want to sit and like do something that doesn't hit the root of the problem, mm-hmm. right? The root of the problem is getting people something that they can use the rest of their life. What can they use their whole life? Their education. So that's why I chose it, and chose working with kids, is because it can make a lifelong change in someone's life.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be part of a change. I still have the ring you got me when I graduated. I think it was like the Christmas I was graduating from college. And I think I remember being like, Piper, buy me this ring. And then you're like, okay. And you bought it for me for Christmas. Yeah. But it's the one that's like that Gandhi quote that says, be the change you want to see in the world. And I really believe that you need to be the change that you want in the world. So, and I think growing up as a pastor's kid and growing up in the church really taught me that.
Yeah. We saw a lot of that in action.
Yeah.
Okay. I got another fun one. What are your top 3 favorite potluck dishes?
Oh yeah. The broccoli cheese casserole.
So good.
It's always what comes to mind. Our mom never made that at home. So that's one. Let's see. What else do I love? Oh, I love, oh my God, why can't I think of any potluck food right now?
What about the Jell-O salads with the marshmallows
and
nuts?
No, that's out. That's out for me. I don't do those.
I love that one.
I was talking to a friend the other day who's from Ireland. And she was like, do people really make Jell-O salads? And I was like, yes.
Yes, unfortunately.
She's like, what? How do people make them? And I was like, you put fruit in it and then you put whipped cream on top. And she's like, no. And I was like, yes. That's real. And she like didn't believe me. She was like, people don't eat Jell-O like that. And I was like, yes, they do.
That's so funny.
But yeah, it was really funny. I mean, mac and cheese is always a favorite. And then I like anything in a crock pot. So I feel like there's a lot of good crock pot things, like the queso. People, you know, would bring chips and queso, those little hot dog weenies in barbecue sauce or whatever. Those were always good.
A classic.
Things like that. That were, if it was going to be, if it came from a crock pot, I was like, yeah, it's been stewing all day. I'm taking some. Oh yeah. And 7-layer dip. I always loved bean dip.
Yes.
I'm a sucker for a good chip and dip.
I think we're a dip family.
Yeah. Oh my God. I was talking to Elvis the other day about this. He was like, do you ever eat chips without dip? And I was like, no, don't bother bringing them to me if they don't have dip. Yeah.
All about it. All about chips and dip.
Yeah.
I was thinking, so in Texas, we always got fried chicken, I feel like, for some reason. And then tamales. See,
oh yes, tamales.
When you're in Texas, there's a really high like Latin American population, and so there's a lot of folks that are at our church who made really good food. I love the tamales; those are the best.
Yeah, those are really good. I forgot about that. I need those again.
So, imagine if you were able to sit down for coffee with your younger self. You can pick an age range. What do you wish that you could really communicate to your younger self?
Yeah, I wish that I had been myself earlier in my life. Like, I wish that I had, like, grown into myself earlier. And I feel like that's something probably everybody wishes, you know? Maybe the idea of, like, you can let go and be your authentic self. Like, it's okay to be yourself. Because I think a lot of how we grew up was, like, to be in the in crowd, you had to have a certain personality. And so I gave myself that personality, but I didn't like it. And I was good at that. Like, I could do that personality just fine. But I wish that I hadn't, and that I had just gone for being myself earlier. Because I had a lot of opportunity for leadership and things at school. And I think I would have gotten more out of it if I had been myself earlier. And also maybe gone to a different college. I think I would, if I could go back, I would communicate to myself maybe to go to school somewhere else. But then again, I got so many, like, amazing opportunities from our school that maybe that wouldn't have been the best. So I go back and forth on that. I remember asking mom, I was like, why didn't you push me to, like, look at other schools? I didn't even apply anywhere else. And she was like, you didn't want to go anywhere else. You never asked to see any other brochures. You never asked to, you know, you never tried to apply anywhere else. And so we didn't push it because you never seemed to want it. And I was like, she's right. But maybe if I had tried, I would have found somewhere else that was where I could be myself earlier. If I hadn't gone to do that semester on the East Coast, like in Boston, then I probably wouldn't be as successful as I am today, because I wouldn't have taken the chance on applying for Teacher America, which means no Johns Hopkins, which means no, you know, all of those other steps that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't have happened without me going somewhere else outside of SNU. So I go back and forth on what I would tell myself about that, you know?
Yeah, because, you know, the future, you know, I mean, in the past, you never know. You can always think about the what ifs, but you can't go back, you know?
Yeah.
I think SNU is really good at reaching out to youth and stuff, because every like Nazarene teenager that I knew was like, yeah, I'm going to SNU. It was like, very much encouraged.
Yeah. I mean, it was for sure encouraged. And like, I don't regret it in so many ways, because it was really, like, I got a great education there, and I got really good opportunities because of it. And because dad, again, this is like a perk, I guess, of being a pastor's kid, but dad knew people at SNU. So I worked in the vice president's office. I wouldn't have gotten that job if dad hadn't known the vice president, you know, like I got it because we knew people. And so things like that look really good on a resume, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And like gave me a really good opportunity to be in a great leadership position. And I probably wouldn't have done that at a bigger or different school, because I just wouldn't have done that there. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is a perk of a smaller university, a smaller community, is there's more opportunities.
Yeah.
Cool. So what advice would you give to pastors who are raising kids right now?
We've talked about this, but like, don't micromanage or like be overbearing towards your kids, right? You have to let them be themselves, because the more you try and like push them into a cookie utter, like, specific person, the less they will want to be that person.
Right.
I don't know if that makes sense. And like letting your kids follow their interests and like be their selves, even as you are yourself in your role, is important. So not forcing your kids to be the most outgoing, and not, or not forcing your kids to like do too many things.
Let your kid be your kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Figure themselves out.
Yeah.
So we're kind of wrapping it up. Thanks. I really appreciate you joining me for this interview, and it's been fun to catch up and everything. So where can people go to hear more from you? You have your blog, which I mentioned at the beginning, MeganTheTravelingTeacher.com.
Yeah.
What are you on social media?
Yeah, my Instagram is Megan_Elise, Megan with an H. And then I have TikTok. I talk a lot about teaching on that, though. Meg the Traveling Teacher. I mean, I'm always working on a project. I'm always working on something there. But yeah, if you're interested in traveling or teaching or like my journey from the classroom into a new job, all of that, definitely on my blog is the place to go. I'm always posting something.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere. We'll just follow. You're all across on all the social media. So thanks again. I hope, I know this was this is the first one that I'm recording, and so I hope that the audio sounds all right, and that that this was entertaining for everybody.
Yeah.
Thanks, Meg.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks so much for joining me on this very first episode of Pastor's Kid. I would so appreciate if you would like, review, and subscribe. Those things really help to get a new podcast like this one to be seen. Our theme music is Brushmaster by Yore. Find him on Spotify and Apple Music. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Pastor's Kid Podcast, and on Twitter at Pastor's Kid Pod. Find us anywhere you listen to podcasts. I'm your host, Piper Ramsey Sumner. See you next time.